This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work, Policy, and Practice at the University of Chicago. The master's program in social work offers a one-year advanced standing option for students with a bachelor's degree in social work that builds on prior training and connects students with expert faculty and five specialized pathways. Apply by February 1st at crownschool.uchicago.edu/socialwork. Inspire change. Shape the future.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
These days, many artists are finding themselves in an existential battle with artificial intelligence. Today's AI tools can copy and recreate unique artistic styles, pixel by pixel, and that's putting creators' livelihoods at risk. But there's a third player on the battlefield. Call it an ally, or maybe a savior. I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. UChicago's Security Algorithms Networking and Data Lab, the SAND Lab, is helping artists disguise their images and trick AI. Computer science professor Ben Zhao is the lab's co-director. Kelly Engelbrecht has an article in the March issue of Chicago Magazine called The Great AI Art Heist. Kelly began with explaining some of the challenges AI poses to artists.
So basically, we live in a world right now where in order to be a successful artist, whether a visual artist or any kind of medium, you're putting your work on the internet. That's really critical to your success. And in around 2022, specifically visual artists were starting to realize that something was kind of going on. Artists were realizing that work was showing up on the internet that looked a lot like their work, but they hadn't actually made it. And what they realized is that there were these companies like Midjourney, Stability AI, that were basically scraping their images into large data sets and using that to train AI models to be able to mimic their artwork.
Interesting.
So people could put in a prompt to make a piece of art that maybe looked like an artist that they really admired, and it would shoot something out that would look like that artist's work, even though the artist was unaware that their work was being used in this way.
So it would be similar to work that they had done before, but not the exact piece.
Exactly, yes.
Interesting. But clear that they were copying their style.
Absolutely, yes.
So Ben, walk us through what generative AI is and what it can do visually.
Yeah, generative AI describes, generally, a large, broad sort of swath of different models that, for the lack of a better term, I suppose, the best analogy is it is an interpolation machine. It takes lots of samples of human work, whether it be visual art or music or text, and it finds patterns in them sufficiently deep that it will basically replicate them. It will sort of, figure out what phrases are common to a particular type of prose. It will figure out certain idioms. It will figure out certain words that are appropriate. And when you give it certain prompts, it'll generate content that basically is meant to mimic human output, right? So, its success rate is basically defined by how often you will see its output as basically something that really has maybe come from a human writer or a human artist.
Interesting. So that's how it replicates and even steals an artist's work. Kelly, you talked with artist Kim Van Duyn. Tell us her story.
So Kim was a really wonderful person to talk to. She actually was the person who had the idea to involve Ben and his team in potentially helping out and joining the fight against generative AI. She's a Belgian artist who actually had a career in academia before deciding that she just couldn't help herself. She wanted to be an artist. And so she dove into it, and she realized that something was happening, again, around 2021, 2022. Her work is mostly fantasy. She has these really beautiful images that depict castles and fantastical landscapes. Think like Dungeons and Dragons.
Yes.
And she noticed that her work was being scraped or stolen. And so she was the one that reached out to Ben's PhD student, Sean Son, and said, hey, is there something that maybe you guys could do to help me out? She was familiar with their previous work with Fox, which was a different kind of software that was more had more to do with photography and personal image. And she thought that this could be something that they could maybe apply to help protect her artwork. The short story there is that that technology didn't work, but it inspired the team to dig in and try and find another way to kind of create some barriers to this non-consensual theft that was happening.
So, Ben, Kelly mentioned Fox. That's one of the tools here. And we've got Fox, Glaze, and Nightshade. Three tools that I want you to walk us through what they are and how they work exactly. And you can do this one by one. Let's start with Fox.
How they work exactly, that might take a little bit of time. Fox was designed, back in late 2019. I think we were primarily concerned about potential misuses of AI when AI would be so easily accessible to anyone. And my concern would be that if anyone could train anyone's images, for example, from social media, because we all have such large online footprints, then potentially anyone can build a facial recognition model out of all of us, right? And so we started building this tool that basically allowed you to alter your own images, your selfies, your family photos, where it would identify the faces and it would alter them in very, very subtle ways, and so that you can still post them on the family Christmas card and social media and whatnot. And most people would not be able to tell the difference. But to AI, they would get a very different feel for what you and I or whoever was in that photo look like. So if then someone were to train on these images, they would get a very distorted sense of what, you look like, for example.
Okay.
And it turns out that as we were building this, we thought this was for a dystopian nightmarish scenario that would never come to pass. It turns out, as we're about to submit the technical paper, the Kashmir Hills article at the New York Times on clearview.ai happened that week, basically showing that we were already in this dystopia.
So you were ahead of the times, it sounds like. How did you know we would end up here? It sounds
paranoia.
Like you didn't. paranoia.
It's not something that you really want to be accurate on, right? We try to sort of prevent bad futures from happening. And when you do those kind of work and then, it turns out you're already too late, that's not a great feeling.
That's wild. What should we know about Glaze and Nightshade?
So Glaze happened basically after we, jumped on a call, on a large Zoom call, after an invitation from Kim, Sean, me, Heather. Three of us were on a town hall with, a few hundred artists who were just talking to other artists about, the effect generative AI had already had on their careers. So people like, Carlo Ortiz and Greg Rutowski and these other very well-known artists already talking about how their names were being used mm-hmm. as prompts, right? And so when we got off that call, basically, Sean and I had particularly spent a lot of time on Fox. So we knew we could basically do something that was similar. So three of us got together and within about 2 months, we had wrapped up a first cut of a project that basically did something similar, except for art, except in, diffusion models, which is very, very different, generations away from what we did with Fox. But it basically does something high-level similar, right?
Yeah,
so
okay.
You take a piece of art, you alter it, it changes like 90% of the pixels, but, if you put them side by side by the original, you really can't tell the difference, even if you are the artist.
Wow.
But the AI model will see it very, very differently. It'll see, I can give you a charcoal, very dark, foreboding portrait, and it'll see like a Jackson Pollock.
That's mind-blowing to me. Kelly, I can only imagine you're doing such a deep dive into this topic, of course, for your writing, but just, just as a person, are you just not like, what? When you come across some of this?
It's pretty incredible, and it kind of almost feels a little bit like alchemy or magic, which I think is really exciting.
Tell us about some of the other artists that these tools have been helping. I know we've talked about Kim, but who else did you speak with?
Well, Ben brought up Greg Rutkowski, who is a really fantastic artist. He's in Poland. He actually, I think his name has been used something like 400,000 times in these different, as a prompt. And so he was, and he has been incredibly impacted by this. His, again, similar to Kim, his art style is fantastical. It's kind of this fantastical realism landscape. So people are really excited about them. So of course, if they can create their own using his style, they're absolutely going to do that. And he's really been at the forefront of trying to fight this fight as well.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Ben, any response from tech companies?
Probably not things that I would discuss on radio, but nothing official, right?
Okay.
I mean, companies know better, especially in the age of lawsuits, when I think every single one of the big Gen AI companies is already active in multiple lawsuits. They know better than to speak, especially against something like this. So, you know, but I've had lots of conversations individually with people at these companies. Some are former colleagues, some are, you know, former students, obviously. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it honestly, it really varies quite a bit. There have been people at some of these companies who are extremely excited and super supportive of the kind of things that we're doing, mostly because they don't necessarily agree with high-level decisions made in terms of what they're doing with models and what they're doing with training. At the same time, there are other people who, you know, see us as people trying to slow down innovation.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there's a whole variety of opinions.
Yeah, I mean, because we hear so much about AI. It's being forced upon a lot of us in a lot of different ways. And I think mostly people try to push this positive image of AI. Like, it's a helpful tool. It's helpful. But I get the sense, Ben, you don't necessarily see it that way.
You know, I think that nothing is binary. Nothing is sort of so clear cut, right? I mean, obviously, there are some uses for these kind of tools. To be honest, I do struggle myself to imagine, you know, revenue generating applications that really impact nature. I would say, you know, if you look at the last generation of AI systems, which of course are still around, the non-generative AI stuff, that's the stuff that has the potential to really change society. That's the stuff that, you know, impacts climate change, drug discovery, you know, disease detection from x-rays. I mean, all the things that we think of as like, holy crap, you know, scientific breakthroughs, those are the models doing that. You know, these models, what they do is they give you pretty pictures and they give you text that mimic other text. So I personally had some trouble finding out, you know, thinking of interesting money-making applications other than, you know, chatbots and customer service, right?
You know, Kelly, generative AI is just going to advance over time. What could that mean for artists?
That's a really great question. I think that there are far-reaching implications, not just for visual artists, but obviously for musicians, for voice artists.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always thinking about this as it relates to writers. I think that when it comes to generative AI, one thing that was really impactful for me when I was speaking with Ben for this article was realizing, and he told me specifically outright, that AI, generative AI, the way we know it, is actually not that smart, right?
Mm.
And so my hope is that as we kind of move into this future where generative AI is really taking hold, we have an awareness that it's not as smart as maybe we're thinking it is, or as the media wants us to think.
Yeah.
And so having that awareness, maybe we can slow it down a little bit, or have some sort of, we understand that we can maybe use it as a tool if we need to help us out with something.
Right.
But it's never going to replace art in the way that it should. You know, it's never going to actually have that human quality.
There's
that
so
makes,
much fear around that, though.
Exactly.
Kelly. A lot of people think their jobs are going to be replaced by AI.
Yeah. And I think that could be a reality that we're working towards. But, and I don't know if they're, I feel like it's too late in the game to pull the plug on the machine, right? Like, things are moving forward. A lot of money is being put into this technology.
Yeah.
It almost feels like an arms race among these big tech companies. And so I know for me, when I think about this world that we're moving toward, I think about the ways that I can continue to engage with the physical and tangible world, right? Something that I was really inspired by speaking with Greg, that Polish artist, is, he's a digital artist, but since all of this has happened, he's really started to move back into working with canvas and paint. He's showing his pieces in physical galleries. And I think that that's something that's really inspiring. And for me, as a writer, as an artist, as someone who really loves creativity, I want to think about the ways that I can work with my hands to create and walk away from the screen, even if it's going to impact my daily life or my professional life in other ways. I think that there are these small moments where we can really ground ourselves in the real world that I think will really help.
That's an interesting response, you know, to sort of getting away from the digital space, right, and getting us back to real life, real human craft. Generative AI tools like ChatGPT, Ben, you know, and those other so-called large language models, you know, they've gotten really, really good at writing, as Kelly brought up, you know, research, coding, other things. Could your lab maybe create programs that could help protect people in other fields beyond art?
Yeah, I mean, we've had this question asked of us ever since the first news broke out about Glaze. You know, we've been working on different modalities. I've been encouraging sort of colleagues in the research community to do the same. And since Glaze came out, you know, we've already seen now the introduction of effectively a Glaze kind of tool for the human voice. And there, you know, this group at Washington University of St. Louis, they're working with the NAVA, the National Association of Voice Actors, to try to adopt the tool so that, you know, they can protect voice actors. We've seen, or I guess we will see in May, a paper from University of Tennessee of a group there basically building a Glaze-like tool to protect compositional music. So, you know, a lot of these projects are being worked on. Mm-hmm. I will say that, you know, I want to push back a little bit on the sense that LLMs are great at all these things.
You mean large language models?
Right, yeah, sorry.
LLMs. Like ChatGPT?
Exactly, GPT and the like. You know, what they are is they are very similar to their diffusion model counterparts in that they are very good at replicating superficial lower level things. But once you start reading into the text, once you go beyond, you know, a paragraph describing one simple little thing, everybody finds them sort of vapid and lacking ideas.
Oh, yeah, you got to fact check like crazy.
Well, I mean, of course, blatant errors and hallucinations galore, but also just even asking it about something, it will never take an opinion because it's so afraid to make a statement, right? And so many different data sources. So, yeah, I actually do not believe that they're going to do significant damage to you know, coders or writers in general in the future. Mm-hmm. I think it is much more of a issue of perception. And the marketing and the hype right now around these tools is what's making people lose jobs.
Yeah, about a minute left here. What do you want to see then from universities, governments, corporations?
I want to see people reach back to sort of what they believe is right and wrong, and whether it be licensing properly, whether it be enforcing copyright. I want them to ignore this sort of possible threat of, you know, losing tax revenues from things that don't even exist, right? And that's been the biggest bargaining chip for a lot of these companies right now, is change copyright law or we'll move away this, you know, billions of tax revenues that may or may not actually show up or exist. Yeah. And I think, yeah, I'd like to see that.
Interesting. We'll leave it there for now. That's Ben Zhao, who's co-director of UChicago's Security Algorithms Networking and Data Lab, also known as the SAND Lab, and Kelly Engelbrecht, who's a journalist and author of the article, The Great AI Art Heist. Very interesting story. You can find it now at chicagomag.com. Keep that reporting coming, Kelly.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Ben.
Thank you.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced and mixed by Ari Mejia, and it was edited by Dan Tucker. To make sure you never miss an episode, hit subscribe or find us at wbez.org/reset. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. We'll meet again soon.
My name is Liz, and as a teacher, I think that WBEZ provides endless sources that I can bring back to my students where they can also engage in a deeper understanding. I teach government, I teach U.S. history, and I have used sources from WBEZ in order to help enrich the understanding of my students.